forever. Dog.
The goody goody.
Sabrina Jellies. The goody goody. You're listening to the goody goody. Today's guest is Sudi Green.
Sudi Green.
Yeah, can you say live?
Live.
From Los Angeles.
South Carolina, yes.
She's been a writer on SNL for 5 years.
Oh, yes.
And she came and she brought you a truck, right? Yeah, she brought you a truck, so we love her. And we loved her anyway. So, yeah, get ready to love her as well. Say, listen up.
A truck.
And say, rate our podcast.
My.
Yes. 5-star.
My.
My 5-star.
My 5.
Thank you, Wolfie.
Nina.
I'm here with my internet friend turned real friend real fast, Sudi Green.
Hi.
That's how I say your name, right? Sudi?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Well, perfect. First try. I just want to say you came over with a set of 3 trucks for Wolfie, and honestly, fucking nice move.
I can't show up to a home empty-handed. My Persian, like, alarm bells were going off, and I was like, I'm going to Sabrina's house. I'm obsessed with her baby, who I've never met.
What do the alarm bells sound like?
Like, what you put it, hi, like that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's like every... I don't speak Farsi, so maybe what I did was racist, but that is every...
I don't see that.
exactly. And I'm like standing on a mountain.
I like,
and, like,
that she's like kind of struggling. It's kind of romantic.
Yeah. Okay, it's okay for me to do, but kind of not you.
But it was actually Bollywood. So that's why I wanted to step in to just bridge the gap, because you totally stole from my people, half of my people, 50% of my people. Is it okay for anybody to say, ha, chiputu? And this is the way we'll find out. Everybody listening to this podcast right now, you got your earbuds in, you are in public. That's the only way I advise listening to this podcast. And that's the rule.
Yeehaw!
You heard it here first. So I want you to... And the lyrics are Hachibutu.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And the tone is... So, white, black, Indian, and Asian, I want you all to pipe up all at once.
I don't know if I can endorse
you don't
this.
Want this.
I feel fine doing it, but when it's a call to action, that's kind of where I draw the line.
You think that if you saw an Asian person doing that...
You're right. If a person of color did that in public, yes, nobody would say a thing.
Nobody say a thing. Now, if you are white, you're on your own.
If you're on white, and that's my policy on all things.
Yeah, if you're white,
you're on your own, babe. Figure it out.
Yeah, but you have all sorts of other things, and you know it, and that's just the way it is, okay?
It's a balance.
You know it's a balance.
So anyway, I just felt like deep in my brain that you can't go to somebody's house empty handed. And also, if you want a baby to like you, you bring them something.
If you want a baby to like you, you have something in your hand that is theirs.
He's such a sweetie.
And he is a miraculous gift from the ocean. I just told you the story that we made him. Like, literally just, he is a true sparkle of ale. I mean, they're all, most babies are, but like, I have to say we haven't dampened it from out of his pores. Like, society will try to. He manifested out, and people really want that connect. And I guess what I'm saying here is, buy my child toys.
Your baby is a star.
Or even like a flower. Like, literally, yeah. Bring a child anything. Because people also, it's wild how people spin out based on a baby's reaction, which is just really telling of, I think that like if the first day of therapy for the therapist to actually find out like who they're dealing with, they should like hand a baby to the person and then see how they react.
I was fully prepared for, you know, because I was like, I don't know Wolfie. I can't claim to know Wolfie. I feel like I know him because I've watched him grow up on the gram. And truly, babies are the only thing that makes me happy. Animals could take or leave. If I have a good one in front of me, I'm like, okay, this is cool. A baby transcends all for me, and I was prepared for like, maybe he's clingy. Maybe he's grumpy. Maybe he's just woke up from a nap. Maybe he doesn't want to engage. He's
yelling at a waiter as you walk in.
I very much was like ready to
no
let.
No ice.
Yeah, exactly. That's him.
You have a niece?
Yes, I have a star niece named Azza. She's three. She's my everything.
Do you feel, well, maybe we won't get into that because that's your sister's life, but I'm like, do you want her to move closer to you?
Because
she lives in Nashville.
Of course I do, and I constantly
cut this out because it's true.
I mean,
we don't have to.
No.
Okay, I feel like I'm like
she's probably listening.
Okay, good. We won't cut it out. I just felt,
No, my sister lives in Nashville. I live in New York. My parents live in
Delaware.
Shout
out to your sister. What is your sister's name?
Sammine.
She's
the light of my damn life.
You are the light of my life too. Now, knowing that you listen to the pod, also my brother's name is Sam.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Makes you think.
Makes you think we have a similar experience because there are two older Sams in our lives. Did your sister like break down barriers for you, or was it like me where my brother would be like push me off of a ledge to see if it was safe?
I think so. She definitely did. I think that she was like, you know, don't listen to Britney Spears, listen to the White Stripes and like, you know, listen to Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And like, she was just cool. And like, she was, I think, cooler than most people she went to school with. Like, I think like very much a person who like, and I was the same way. Like,
so you feel like she heightened your taste a little?
Totally. Totally. And also would like call me out in a way that was good. Like, I'll never forget, like, this was my like constant existence where she's like, do you want to look in the mirror a little more? Like, just constantly calling me out, like, in a way that was good. Like, I think she prevented me from being... I was already annoying, and I could have been a lot worse.
That's good. My brother never told me to look in the mirror more, and as a result...
No, well, my sister was being sarcastic. She was calling me out for looking in the mirror a lot.
I thought she was like, fucking get the shit out of your teeth and get a better haircut, bitch.
No, she was like, I can see you, bitch. Like, stop, like, acting out a scene in your head and in the bathroom.
That is so funny. Acting out a scene in your head in the bathroom. I guess I did. I think that's like probably like part of the rite of passage of being like a little girl that's eventually going to open a podcast by singing fake Farsi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Performative.
When were the other parts of your disease showing?
Well, I think that I was always like, I feel like something's important for you to know is that I had really bad teeth growing up.
Oh my God, I want to know all the important things. Your teeth look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I bought them.
Crowns?
Yeah, crowns.
Whoa.
Crowns all the way.
I got my first partial crowns. It was emotional for me.
Which ones are crowns?
In the back. I was going to a dentist who was the only Persian that's wronged me. I purely liked them because they were Persian and I felt connected.
I went to a dentist that was Persian too and I was like, he won't cheat me. And
that's
he didn't.
What I felt. Mine did.
Wow.
Because I got... Basically, I've like told this, but I probably like started every of the past 7 episodes with the story, but basically went to him. He said my teeth were great. Had like a feeling I needed to go to a different dentist. The feeling was like the chair was broken 1 week and they like stacked a bunch of books on like a rolly chair to like lean the heavy chair against. And I was like, this is starting to feel less legit. Went to a different dentist. The dentist was like, ma'am, you have a hole in your tooth. A hole.
A hole.
A full hole in my tooth that was like developing bead? Because of like a corroded cavity. Mm. So they had to like, you know, grind off your, it's just so.
Yeah, they have
so
to they grind
ground
it down. So they
all of the meat of your teeth off.
Well, I had to like sort of disassociate from my body. Like,
yes.
I have had cuckoo teeth. I was born with like a lot of missing adult teeth.
Oh my God, you
star. And my parents were like, shit, we got to pay for college and this, like, it's bad. And also I have very curly hair that I didn't get what to do with until about 2 years ago, so it was and I
had arrived, bitch.
And I had tits when I was like 11, like, it's not maybe even 9, like, it was a bad mix,
just picturing it all at once.
And it was so, like, I basically was walking, I had braces for my entire like developing years.
Your children teeth come out and then it was like, come on, adult
and then
teeth.
It was like, come on, adult teeth. And they were like, actually, no, they didn't exist? Make their call time. And they were kind of like, the stage manager is running around in my mouth and they're like, I can't find them. And my other teeth are like, okay, I guess we'll just like fill in the gaps. Like, it's bad.
Live from New York, it's toothless but tits.
Absolutely toothless with tits. And so I was a bit of a freak my entire life, like well into college, like just didn't even have the basics down. And I think that I just like blocked it all out. And I was so confident and so amazing, like in like every activity I could get into, and like felt like I was just like this, I don't know. I just like blocked it all out. I think I was like, I'm not going to not do all the shit I want to do just because I know I'm nasty.
Because you did know that there was nothing sexual. I mean, I can relate to like feeling very like the sex game is not for me. I'm all about these activities, bitch. Like, you can't hold me down. I will be student council, yes, junior mayor. Mm-hmm. I will be friends with the potheads.
Wait, what
friends
was
with
junior
the nerdies,
mayor?
Friends with the dangerous Chris French. Like friends all galore.
Yeah, friends
but like,
with everybody.
Literally never touch me. / I will make myself so that you know that you will never want to.
Yeah,
get
completely
a hand job.
I definitely like found. I definitely was. I was not like a sexual entity to like many guys that I interacted with. It was just like not on the table at all. But then I've always like found my guys. Because there's always somebody on your level.
I guess, yeah. But you're speaking also as like a straight person.
Yeah,
so it was like,
exactly.
I think even when I found my guys, I was like, it's not the right time. Mm-hmm,
right, exactly. If I'm
but
not
you found your guys after teeth? Or like
no, amidst teeth. And God bless them.
Oh my God.
God
so
bless
which
everyone.
Ones, show me which ones were missing.
Okay, I had these two.
She's pointing to her lateral C-sissy-sephens.
C-sissy-sephens are big implants that I have, my big implants.
Okay.
They're implants.
Can you eat an apple?
No, can't bite into an apple. I have to slice it.
Yeah.
Yeah, even pizza kind of depends.
Real?
Yeah, a big sandwich with baguette, that's not in my life
anymore.
Any
funky fresh stories of tooth crumbling off?
Yeah, actually, I...
Yeah, actually, you've come to the right place.
Yeah, actually. Absolutely, on like the night before a wedding, bit into, this was actually my best day of Instagram stories, bit into an olive and my two front teeth fell off. And two front crowns. So I had two tiny teeth that kind of like
the nubbins.
Two nubbins that kind of faced inwards, kind of like when you're skiing and you want to stop.
Oh my fucking God.
And then I had to like text my Persian dentist and tell him to come in on a Saturday. And then I was like, I have to go to a wedding tonight. And then, he came, he was like an hour and a half late. He was like, I came in from Jersey. He doesn't talk like that, but but then I posted all these Instagram stories because I was like, this is too good. This is so funny. I like could either hide this from the world or like embrace this moment. And then the girl whose wedding I went to told me that she was really nervous, and then she was watching my Instagram stories, and then she was like, oh, it's just my dumb friends coming, and then it made her feel a lot better.
I mean, duh. It's like, how can that not put everything in perspective?
It made her
like,
feel
if
beautiful.
She's coming with her cross-ski tiny nubbin teeth.
It made her feel beautiful.
Good. Well, you're a generous person, but you did put fake crowns in then, the temporary crowns. What did they, did he just snap his off and toss him in you? Like, how did he just had extra.
He tossed him in me. I don't know. I don't know.
Put something there though.
Yeah, he put something there. He and I have sort of a, we have like a.
You fucked.
Yeah, we fucked. Absolutely.
Really?
No, we didn't. There have been times where I'm like, what's going on here? But sometimes I get very
He's
jokey.
Like massaging your tongue.
I run into this a lot with like people. Medical people, people in my life that I just like get very jokey when I'm like nervous. And then it like kind of breaks down that wall.
And then all of a sudden they're telling you about their marriage or something?
A little bit.
That's cool.
And then I'm like, what's going on here? Because this is what I intended, but I don't hate being here, you know?
Okay, so you have deep relationships with your medical people. is what you're
Some
saying.
Of them, yeah.
Okay. All right. So
they feel
learned,
close to me.
We've learned a couple secrets so far on the goody goody. So the aesthetics not clicking with what society would probably feel like
accept.
You should. Yeah, accept.
Or
like
enjoy or celebrate.
Yes. That's like number one of making the funny funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you probably were performing, like what was your like path into everything?
You
like
know,
the beginning stages.
Absolutely ran my high school improv troupe.
Absolutely.
A high school improv troupe in Delaware is like exactly what you think it is. It's like a lot of like just I went to a public school. Nobody wanted to sign up for the plays because it was so lame. It was so uncool to do plays. Like I went to a big sports high school. Like nobody was into the arts at all. And then not only was I wasn't even doing like, oh, I'm doing Grease. Like comes I was doing improv. Like that's bad. That's the worst.
So people were like, do not go to the shows.
You
or
know,
did you like create kind of a culture? Did you bring toys?
I think the freaks came out to support. Yes. And the honors kids, you got to give it up for the honors kids.
You got to. Ready?
Yeah.
That's for the honors kids, baby.
Shout out to
all
the
you
honors
kids. All you kids out there doing your homework, making people feel good, feeling weird about yourself, wondering if your teeth are going to grow in. They won't. Keep learning, keep making money, honey. Teeth are expensive. And I do wish it was over now. Stop. Okay, perfect.
So beautiful.
Okay, so you were an honors kid, you were an improv mm-hmm. kid, and then you got out of the high school and you're like, I'm taking all this confidence. And yeah. You've been fucking too, it sounds like.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because you're finding your guys.
Yeah, found my guys, found my freaks.
Yeah.
You found
yourself. It sounds like yeah. You found yourself early.
I did. I think I had, you know, I was just confident my whole life. I don't know why or who. Everything feels
probably
like
good parents.
Good parents. That's definitely it. Good parents.
Sucking up to your pairs.
Yeah, sorry. I think that also like I was like very much about like achievable goals. And then I think like, oh, when you win this little thing and then your teacher gives you a gold star. I was like very like into all of those little accolades.
You weren't like bogged down by like, I can never be the big thing. You were like, no, I'll just get people to come to this show mm-hmm. and then step by step, which is like the actual real key to any success.
Yeah, just like blind confidence. Blind,
and also, but like being obsessed with the thing that's happening right now and not the big picture thing, mm-hmm. which yeah. I think happens no matter how successful you are. I'm sure there's people that you work with that are like so happy that they're there. And then there's some people that are just like obsessed with the thing that this is going to get them. Mm-hmm. And like, you can be both. You can obviously like, I have dreams beyond the things that I'm doing now, but like mm-hmm. the real dream is making the things that I'm doing now yeah. fun and good and being present for them.
I feel like I've always been the type of person where I'm like, if what I'm doing I enjoy and it seems cool, because so much of life, so much of high school, so much of day-to-day bullshit is bullshit. So if I'm at the thing that actually is like making me happy, I go like full out and only want to make it that thing. Like when I discovered comedy, I wanted that to be my whole life. Like when I liked doing debate in high school or whatever, I was like, let me do it all year round. Like just, you know, because I think that so much of like growing up in suburbia, I didn't fit into and didn't care about. Like, I didn't give a shit about sports. I like did them because I was like, oh, I want to get in college or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, but I just remember every time I was like at field hockey practice being like, this is so boring. And like, a lot of the people here like really like this and they really care about this. And I could not give less of a shit.
Yeah.
And it was sucking.
Do you, if you went back, are you happy that you did do sports because it made you an all around goody goody? But, or if you went back to talk to City as little toothless titty City, would you be like, girl, get out of there and go debate?
I mean, I was never good at it. So it was never like, no, I think I wouldn't really change anything about how I grew up because it got me to where I am and I'm like, feel good.
Well, I flew your parents out here to confront them about something. Make it worth the effort.
Sorry, I'm well adjusted. Fuck.
Okay, so well-adjusted you. You get out of high school, then you go to college, and then are you like, I'm going to be a comedy writer, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to be doing improv forever?
Well, I think I wanted to be an actor first, and then once I started writing, I was like, oh, this is where it's at, because I had control. And I kind of realized like that I...
Ooh, that's the real deep shit.
Yeah.
And that's how you live forever, doll.
Control. Control, baby.
Had control.
Trying to work around it in therapy, but still loving the word, loving the sport. Control.
I just felt like that was like the most creative part, was like, oh, like all this stuff is like kind of born from your brain.
Yeah.
And I thought that that just got me going more. And then I kind of...
And one serves the other.
It's yeah, like exactly.
How, like, what a great sort of climax if I could write a cool part for myself.
Exactly. That's what I've been trying to do my whole damn life.
Me too. Warner Brother, Fox Paramount, please. Take notice, please.
Warner Brother, fuck
Warner
Paramount.
Warner Brother, fuck Paramount.
Make
okay?
a baby and
come
that's
on.
Me.
HBO Maximum, Viacom.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I want your kisses.
Yay. Thank you. Please just make a baby for you.
Are you meeting right now on projects that you've written? Or are you meeting on things? Because you are, did you just wrap up Shrill?
Shrill. Shrill, we like wrapped. It came out in January and we stopped shooting in September.
Okay. And do you, are you on set when they're shooting?
Yeah. I was in Portland for 2 months. It was so fun. We shoot in Portland and it's just like a dream city.
Yeah. Good city. Cool. Empowered strip clubs there.
There were so many nights that I was like, let's go to the strip club, and we never went. We only went, the only time I went to a strip club is when we shot. Other people went to the strip club to like research the strip club scene. I only got to go to like the sanitized strip club, and every night I was like, guys, this is a great night, let's go to the strip club, and nobody would ever go with me.
Well, I get how it's like not appealing, but then my memory of Portland is like, there was this like Jenny Lewis feeling and looking stripper who was like just like so cool, and like if you gave her money she'd kiss you on your forehead and she just seemed, you know, like a cool witch.
Yeah.
And she did this one move where she was like, huh! And clapped her hands and then put her arm, or no, her leg around the pole, and then did like a circle, and it was like theater on the round style seating. So,
damn.
And she like high-fived everyone, and I was like, this is the best person.
Take all my money.
Yeah, like
the athlete.
Sex work, or that area where it feels like the women are completely in control and empowered and selling scripts to Warner Brothers is my jam. That's like, or that's where I can be like, get down with it. Cause so many moments of like bachelorette parties or this or that, like where you go and it's like, this bad one in Philly, I remember, with like this lady's had bruises and like, eyes were not conscious. And it was like, oh, why?
Yeah.
No.
I've never been to a strip club.
What about a show that we pitch where we, this isn't really happening, so don't get nervous.
No, I'm in.
Okay, perfect. Wolfie's an EP. but I think about this, like, what about a show where you like rescue, you know, like we've all been on the streets and heard like just some dark soundbite from someone's life and you're like, oh, get her out of there. You grab her, you kidnap her, you get her off the streets, you teach her a job or build her dream app. She's a millionaire by the end of season one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that definitely would work and have no unforeseen repercussions and not gonna be,
we would be full murdered by,
fucked up at all, kind of. We can, you know what I think every time I see somebody who's troubled, I can teach them, I can save them, I'm the savior in this situation. Oh, and she's getting more bubbles.
I guess maybe that's one of my problems, that I think I can save people. I've learned definitely to not make eye contact as much when I see those kinds of like situations.
Oh, yeah.
Because I definitely, like, for the longest time, I was like, crazy people, they just love me. But it's like, no, bitch, you stare at them. Like, you hear something off-putting, and then you, like, think that you're monitoring the situation and you're going to save the situation. It's like, that's right. Not for you.
I mean, I think it's a balance. I think that we all need to, you know, engage and be humans. But also, if something feels scary, it's scary. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, it was kind of a weird, and I like tried to like think about why this was afterwards, but like I went to London and
I don't know why you do that.
I know. That I had to examine in and of itself. But I went to London and I found myself being much more all open to homeless people there and like giving a lot more, and they try to give in, like, especially, you know, like give food or whatever, you know, everybody tries to help where
they
can.
Is interesting when you travel and you see, like, you just,
but
you
something about them being British, it was truly about them being British where I like, felt you safer.
You have a posh accent.
I don't know,
accent.
Is that crazy?
You felt safer to connect with them?
To, you know, be like, oh, can I come and go into this store and, like, you know, get you something, like, get you food or whatever. You know, they're outside of, like, a 7-Eleven type deal or whatever. I also feel like I had cash and I had change in my pocket, and so I just had, because I was like, I like to have cash when I'm traveling. Even though my credit card is fine. So I have more cash.
I guess it's also like
more.
You're on vacation, so you get to like have a different
That's
identity
true too.
A little bit. It's like,
I was like
me in England, I am a philanthropist. But yes. It's like, I can't run that game at home because I will be broke.
No matter what or why, whatever I do is fucked up and problematic. So I can't, I can't parse it.
Farsi. And we're back. And we are back. How your parents feel about coming? Did they like it?
Did they like it?
Did they let you do it?
Yay.
They're so proud of you.
They nice.
They're nice and proud. Did
they're
they want
nice.
You engineer? No. My mom wanted me to be like, when I was like, I love comedy, she was like, and you will be an animator.
Because that was why. That was like what she could jump to.
It's like that's where she could see me still in front of a computer, which would be a real job, but like being creative.
That's a nice mom who's kind of like, well, she's creative and we know that. And what's a creative job? I know.
A cartoon engineer.
Yeah, those people are paid and people got to make cartoons. So yeah, she's going to do that. My mom would always tell me when I was growing up that I would make a great psychiatrist.
Okay.
Because I think she was like,
still doctor, but you
about,
can talk.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But no, I mean, I think that I don't know. They were cool. They were supportive. I think that there was definitely probably like a moratorium on me trying to do it. Like that, you know, thankfully I never got to because I
they
like,
were like
had,
okay, you've got 5 years and then you're dead to us.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a moment where my mom had that conversation with my dad where she was like,
I mean, and that's healthy and fine.
Too. Yeah. I'm sure that, but I think that they did have like a moment. Well, you know, this is funny, which was, I wanted to do writing and there aren't like that many writing undergrad programs. But one of them is at NYU and I really wanted to go to NYU. And then my parents were like very iffy on the whole thing, I think. And also it's like fucking expensive as hell. And so they were like, I don't know about this.
Yes.
And then we went to this day for like prospective students that was just for Tisch. And they talked a lot about like how exclusive Tisch was and how hard it was to get into and how they really like propped it up as this, because I mean, Tisch is a fancy school, but I mean, my parents didn't know and
it.
Neither did I really.
So they got the Tisch sales pitch.
They got the Tisch sales pitch about how like exclusive it was and hard to get into. And then when I got in, my mom was like, I think
it's
that was
happening!
Like a validation for her, which was, and then when we would, when she would tell people where I was going or whatever, she would say, she's going to Tisch. It was not NYU, which like NYU is a good school. So like that's kind of, but she would go, she's going to NYU Tisch or like Tisch. It was always like she had to throw that
seminar?
Name out there. The Persian in her was like, well, this is the angle that I'm going to play.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it was great. It was very supportive.
And then so you went to Tisch and it was exclusive and it was worth every penny. Or what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think
it seems like you, I mean, you went, did you go at the same time as Bowen and Matt?
I went at the same time as Bowen and Matt, Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers. And they are, I became really, really good friends with Matt, like the minute I met him.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that is the thing that you're paying for is like when you totally. Get to the exclusive place, then like, then if you have that heartbeat connection with someone, they are also like exclusively talented in this
completely.
Way.
I mean, I think that was the thing for me was that like, I'd gone to like a high school that where it was cool to be apathetic. If like that was the minimum that you could be, would be apathetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was going to a college full of creative tryhards. Who cared so deeply?
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
And it was cool to care. And I think I was the kind of person that, like, any college I went to, like I said, go getter, didn't care about my tits or my teeth. Like, I was just going to make the most of any situation that I was in. And I think I definitely made the most out of Tisch. Like, I did the sketch group there, and I was like really getting into writing sketch. And I mean, it was so fun. I like had comedy friends. I only hang out with people who did comedy. I did the whole college comedy thing, like to the nines. And it was like fucking cool.
Yeah. Did you
I mean,
go
it wasn't
straight,
cool,
did you
but
graduate
I had great
from
time.
There and go straight into a business job in the biz?
A little bit. I got a Chris Rock, like started this Comedy Central internship for like diverse kids.
Oh, cool.
And I got into that my senior year. So that was going
to
be like
way
two
to go,
and a
Chris
half
Rock.
Month. Yeah, thanks, Chris Rock.
Thanks, Chris Rock.
Thanks, Chris Rock. We were called the Rock Turns. You love to see it. And so I did that for like two, that was like a 2 month thing where you would like intern at Comedy Central and then you did like a week at The Daily Show and you did a week at Colbert. And then that was like a buffer. Then out of that, I didn't have anything else. So I waited tables. Then I worked as a PA. One of my professors from NYU, I like kind of did a cold email to a lot of people that I knew. And I was like, here's my resume. And then he got me a PA gig at Totally Biased with Kamau Bell.
Oh, cool.
So that was like my first year out of school and I was a PA there and that was awesome. But then that got canceled.
Then you had a little bit of time.
Yeah. And then I waited tables again and then I PA'd a lot.
And low-key, probably everybody that is like writing comedy in New York, there is this sort of consciousness of SNL in a way that's like,
yeah,
everybody in your life is sort of, I mean, certainly for me, when I moved to New York, people were like, and then Lorne Michaels will find you and then you'll be real.
Totally.
Was that always in your mind?
I mean, I always wanted to, SNL was my dream job, but I never really thought that I would get it. I mean, I never really, but I think subconsciously I was like preparing for it. Because I knew it was something I wanted. Hi, Wolfie.
Wolfie's looking at us through the window.
And Wolfie's actually my best friend now, and that's been established.
Honestly, if he could just choose me.
A friendship I bought, but I'm fine with that.
Just honestly, few trucks a week for just a man from the...
After this, everybody that does your podcast is going to bring
Wolfie. I know, I feel bad about it. I want to put it out there. For his birthday party, we said no toys, collected donations. So this is not in my true
that's
heart.
Great.
But I did, as when you came in and you did that move, I was like, yes, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, but now it's lame that we're talking about it so much because it feels like...
I mean,
like...
it's lame for me, but it makes you look good.
Okay, hell yeah.
Okay.
I love a baby.
I love a baby too. Okay, so you were like, this is something that people talk about, but you're very realistic and you're not like addicted to this one outcome of working on SNL.
Yeah, but I loved sketch. I think also like I got hired at SNL when I was pretty young. I was 24 and I didn't know enough about the biz. Like I did JFL, but I didn't. It was my first time auditioning for
JFL characters. Okay.
And it was my first time auditioning, and then I got it.
Whoa,
and
sick. Wunderkind.
She's a little
Wunderkind.
Try hard.
She try hard and she get. Okay, so there's a difference because sometimes you try hard, you don't get nothing. Sometimes you try hard and you get, and that means you're a Wunderkind.
Wow.
So true.
True.
Wow. Yeah. Or, you know, a nerd.
Okay.
Okay.
You've got to deprecate.
Okay. Yeah. She got to deprecate.
She got to deprecate because she's a star. Okay.
I mean,
she can't be here just taking all the compliments, taking all the promo for the toys. She got to say, look, I'm working the system and I know it.
I am working the system. That's something about me. So anyway, so I was very blind to it all. But that is like
really cool that you auditioned for JFL the first time and got it.
It was cuckoo luku. I mean, I think that
did you get repped right away?
I was pre-repped. So I met my manager. I was in this sketch group called Popperlet with a bunch of people that I did NYU with. Okay. Bowen and Matt were in it.
Okay.
I did a show with them at Chicago Sketch Fest.
Okay.
And then I met my manager while she was about to be like, she was an assistant. She was about to be bumped up to a manager and she saw me. And then a couple months later, she moved to New York and emailed me. So then kind of when I first met with her, she was like, what have you written? And I sent her this email with like 8 attachments. Like I was like very extra. I was like, I've done the work and I wrote a script in college and like this is all this
my
stuff.
My memoir is ready to be published.
Exactly. And then she was like, okay, you are.
Can you select one document that is 2 pages or less for me to fully read?
I think I was just kind of like volume. Like,
yeah.
And then she kind of, I remember we had like this initial meeting and she kind of like laid out some like I said, tangible steps, tangible, achievable goals that were like, well, you should audition for JFL. And how are you doing? You should like prepare some solo characters for that. And like, she sent me a couple of tapes of like clients who had done like SNL auditions and stuff. And she was like, these are some things that you can
She's still
do.
Your manager?
Yes.
Oh, great.
The light of my life.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, an assignment? I can fucking do that.
Like, I'm going to like this relationship.
This is school. That's something I know how to do. And so, yeah. So then I guess I don't know.
So you develop the characters around that and then you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like you have like a very innate focus. Like you can see what needs to be done, which is so, I mean, like when you spell it out, it just seems so natural, but it's interesting how hard it is for people.
Well, it's lame.
Including me, including everyone.
Well,
but like,
it's the nerd in me. And like, I just, I totally like recognize that not everybody has like it comes from like having like a Persian mother when I was growing up and like it was not acceptable to get B's and like it was A. And like,
so then you ask yourself, what does it take to get an A? And it's that simple question of like that very practical right now, getting an A on this specific project about dinosaurs and the specific showcase for JFL characters.
I just like applied that mentality, I think, to so many things in my life
and it's
in
your,
a way that worked
for me. So it's more your mom than your dad?
Totally. I mean, my dad is really smart and I think that my dad's a professor at University of Delaware and he's like a genius boy.
What kind of professor?
Political science.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
what does he
cool.
say about our future?
He's actually now kind of transitioning more into historical IR, so he's more about the past.
He's more about the past. What does the past tell us about the future? Like, does your dad think it's all ending?
Yeah, I mean, everybody does, I think. I don't know. Actually, he doesn't. I mean, he's very bleak about it all.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture like one dad, just like picturing a dad, especially like a brown dad being like, you know what?
Oh,
things
I have a white daddy.
Things are going to go good. You have a white dad?
I have a white dad.
Oh my fucking God. Holy moly. Wait a second here.
What? What?
What the hell did you just tell me?
I have a white dad.
Here I am picturing two Persians being behind the creation of City Green. And if you're just coming back from the sound effects, what we have just found out is that her dad is...
What?
White.
Self-destruct sequence activated.
All right. a white dad and a Persian mom. This is blowing my mind because the pattern usually is brown-ish adjacent. Brown man is a man, so is like freer to make decisions that are like basically being gay at the time that our parents were made. Like our parents are the original
lesbians.
Yeah, marrying
a white person was being gay.
Yeah, it was like,
absolutely.
Totally. Like, why are you holding hands? This is crazy. You're setting a bad example for my kids.
Not my fucking... Let me take you back to Iran before the revolution, okay?
Excellent.
We're talking Shah
Absolutely
days. Not that
excellent.
Yeah, not that he was a good guy, the Shah, but, you know, some things were easier at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom's family is like not what most people think of the typical Persian family, although I do think it's typically Persian to be cool.
Yeah, no. To be Persian people cool. are like the Jewish people of the brown people, which is just sort of like, oh yeah, they can hang, they're progressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fun, cool, cosmopolitan, like mini skirts, vodka, all the way. So my mom came from like a very progressive family.
There was no like coming out about marrying a white dude. They were like, no, oh, my great, grandpa we got a white
was like,
one.
My grandpa was like, leave to all of his kids. He was like, get out.
Yeah.
And they all went to like various schools in Europe/America.
Cool.
My mom.
So your grandpa was probably smart, had some cash.
Yes. Yeah. They came from my grandpa was a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah, bitch.
Yeah, you gotta. My grandma was a midwife.
Cash, okay.
My grandma was like a working woman in Iran.
Cool.
Like,
A midwife and a lawyer is like who I want my Persian grandparents to be.
Yeah. They are cool as hell.
Okay.
So yeah, my mom went to Syracuse University and met my dad. And cool. You know, she was like, still she was being Persian. She was like, he's very smart. He's very kind, nice guy.
I can tell he'll genius. Give me big-breasted children.
I will take my big breasts and he will let us stay here and it will all be good. Yeah, yeah. They met in college and fell in love and got married. Cool. Freaking cute as
and
hell.
And still together.
Still together. My dad also was like a young Iowa boy who like was obsessed with like geography and international relations and politics and just like loved foreign people. Like he still does. Like he just is like all about
like if there's a diverse person at the party, he'll like beeyline to
them.
Yeah,
beeline to them and be like, you know,
I lived in Nigeria.
I lived in Ghana. So
next time with Sudi, we talk about can you catch a ball? Just needs to shape a pot.
And I want a guy who has like the personality of a hobbit, but not the body.
Sudi says this.
Oh, maybe she's stupid. I don't know. She could be cool, but she could be stupid too. I don't know. Some people are dumb.
Sabrina says this. That you're like literally all you have to do is squirt out an egg and like I will be carrying it in my fucking body. They both laugh about this.
Bloomberg, back up. Trump, calm down.
And Wolfie says this.
No. Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.